When I look deeply into it, it seems somehow another world, from which there is no return. Not only for those whose bodies are buried, but perhaps for no one. To do justice to this other world, a new speech would have to be born. We would have to learn it, you would never understand it. This is what makes it so difficult to write. More and more we are to be counted among the dead, among the estranged, because the greatness of the occurrence estranges and separates us. The morning came, saddle, mount, walk, march, towards the enemy. A baptism of fire for 3 days of all sorts. We are up against English and French troops. A very tough fight because, although we outnumber them, we are hampered by the lack of planes. So the gun positions of the enemy cannot be spotted, and we have to endure their fire without replying to it. Our army has Ypres as its objective. There is no doubt that the English and French troops would have already been beaten by trained troops. But these young fellows we have only just trained are too helpless, particularly when their officers have been killed. The fact that the enemy is near makes the villagers dangerous as well. I was fired on quite unpleasantly from some houses. The prescribed procedure in this event, to burn the houses in question, is nonsense. Increasing the confusion and the resistance, it almost always strikes the innocent. I had 2 men shot, whom I found in 2 houses from which we were fired on. This had the required effect. The battle continues. Fierce night encounters, a grandiose horizon of burning. Clouds like sections of agate. We halted for some time, dismounted along a wall, the whole squadron. On the other side of the street there was a little wayside chapel, such as are common in this part of the country, empty and unused. My trumpeter asked whether he should take the horses inside, his and mine, evidently thinking that they would be safer there. First I said yes, then, for some reason or other, no. So he stood outside with the horses. In a few minutes, a heavy English shrapnel shell broke through the back of the shrine and burst in the middle. If the trumpeter and I had been in the chapel, there would have been nothing left of us, or the horses. Only 1 ball got the trumpeter's unfortunate horse and killed it. The trumpeter looked at me strangely, as if I were the Lord God. Slow progress, if it can be called progress. Naturally, the smallest success is noted with satisfaction, but a setback is not shouted from the housetops. Already the place has become a waste. Fire and death are everywhere. Empty, plundered farms, graves with a helmet stuck on them, the mounds often built up with the hands out of the solid, clammy clay. The wounded often lie for days, for fighting goes on to and fro by night as well as by day. Of course, there is still oats for the horses in the farmhouses, but precious little for the men. We have no oil for the lamps, no light, no salt, no bread. The dragoons managed to make a potato soup. It was delicious because we were so hungry. Our fight infantry battalion, almost all Marburg students, the best troops we have as regards musketry, have suffered terribly from enemy shellfire. In the next division, just such young souls, the intellectual flower of Germany, went singing into an attack on Langemark. Just as vain, and just as costly. Everything on the front is rooted to the same spot. I don't call it a success when a trench, a few hundred prisoners are taken. They've always cost more blood than they are worth. The war has got stuck into a gigantic siege on both sides. The whole front is one endless fortified trench. Neither side has the force to make a decisive push. Behind us, the peasants wander slowly back to their farms so far as they are still standing, but there is no return to Passchendaele. The ruin here is indescribable. The houses are torn from top to bottom. They overhang, they are still falling in. The paving of the streets is in the houses. The roads are pitted with the craters of burst shells. Roofs lie in the street. Cobblestones lie in the bed with the window sashes they brought in with them. A lake of beer has flowed from the broken vats of the brewery into the cellars. One can see it through a sieve of arches. Not a pillar in the church is unbroken. I saw the tower fall in 1 piece across the marketplace. A great bloated cloud of yellow dust arose from the marketplace as if the dust itself bore a banner. In her living room was a dead horse with half its entrails trailing over the yellow silk chairs and cushions. I cannot guess how it got there. Everyone is getting ready for a winter campaign. As far as I can judge, there is no possibility of an early finish. The problems of the end are too great for that. Even though the situation is favourable on the whole, as it seems, one gets fed up with the length of the operations. The troops are getting naturally more undisciplined than they were after their training. The senselessness and greed of the people around the transport and field kitchens, which are more attractive than the places where there is shooting, is already perfectly disgusting. Unfortunately, everyone does not seem to be possessed of patience. The Corps and Army commanders see that the others in other parts have obtained tangible successes, so they thirst for laurels too. It is a human weakness, but they think it is a virtue not to lag behind the others, and do not realise that this virtue must be paid for in blood. Cold storms, snowflakes that make the horses shake their heads with annoyance, warn us that we must get ready for cold weather. Today, for the first time, it is quieter on the front. The trenches, filled with icy water, do not encourage one to reinforce the slender garrisons with which both friend and foe are holding the fire. Both parties are in the same situation. The business may last for a long time. We have now been stuck in the same spot for 5 weeks. For 5 weeks, the newspapers have been saying that Ypres is to be the decision of this phase of the war at least. This may have been right a few weeks ago, but a decision depends also on the time taken to effect it. Now this part of the front is losing the character of a decisive sector. What we have gained in ground, and the enemy's losses, however great, can only be called a success by a man who does not see both sides. For, apart from the fact that our losses have probably balanced those of the enemy, no one can possibly estimate at present what this breathing space of 5 weeks may mean for France and England. We may be stuck, for good and all. Now the losses are often the fault of the men. Our men do not trouble their heads over the fact that only picked snipers are firing from the enemy lines. Men who, at a range of often less than 100 yards, cannot help hitting every head that shows itself. It is not contempt of death that makes them expose themselves to certain death, it is a lack of discipline. Precise instructions and orders on the subject have been drawn up, but they are not observed. One officer said the other day, by way of excuse, that it was exactly the same in 1870. I replied, "All the worse." As matters stand now, not only here, but all along the line, both we and the enemy have so crippled ourselves by infighting that we cannot get a blow in properly. We cannot get the momentum for a thrust. Once again, I observe that here at least the art of war is not noticeable. It may be an incredible achievement to create this endless, unbroken line from the Alps to the sea as a monstrous whole, but it is not my idea of a strategy. Not one of the belligerent powers, and not one of their men, have as yet developed a technique of modern warfare. To impress one's particular stamp on a war, Napoleonic, Hannibalic, Moltke-esque, or Caesarian, but whose style have we to show in the West? Our first advance had a style that could be perceived, but it seems probable that it was conceived and planned by one who is now dead, or who is not on the spot to carry on the style. Winter quarters is written plainly now. All units except those in the very front line are bringing up their second line transport. Of course, this shows how safe we feel ourselves. We would not dare to do it otherwise. But it shows also that we have renounced our freedom of manoeuvre, and therefore that we expect a long period of stagnation. It will be, indeed, a strange Christmas that is coming. Perhaps the great justification of celebrating this feast of peace in wartime at all will not occur. Insuperable contradictions seem to me like changing dreams at night. The year is drawing to its close. It has been a grave year for all of us who, in spite of all earnestness and deep thought, must admit to ourselves that we cannot realise what the war means. Does it not seem to be a monstrous folly? that mankind with drawn sword is weltering in a massacre before which it will someday stand aghast, like Ajax among the slaughtered sheep. I have not written to you for a long time, but I have thought of you all the more as a silent creditor. But when one owes letters, one suffers from them, so to speak, at the same time. So it is with the war. Feeling deeply about it, one becomes less able to talk about it every day. Not because one understands it less each day, but because one grasps it better. But it is a silent teacher, and he who learns becomes silent too. The stagnation that this siege warfare has brought about gives a superficial observer the illusion of peace. One regulates intercourse with the local population as well as one can. One tries to arrange for the tillage of the land. One trains the men as well as possible in mud and filth. One visits the officers of neighbouring units. One spends hours in discussion. The war is ignored, for not everyone has the capacity or the habit to notice it in everything and everyone. Yet it is behind everything and everyone. That is the strange part of it. The starlings that winter hereabouts in hordes whistle like rifle bullets, and as the bullets cannot have learnt to whistle from the starlings, one may safely presume the opposite. And everything whistles its tune of the war. The houses, the fields, men, beasts, rivers, and even the sky. The very milk turns sour under the thunder of shellfire. What the English do, they do well. They will make good soldiers. Perhaps not so many as people think, but good ones. If England were to introduce conscription, it would be more dangerous for us than anything she has ever done. The quality of troops has always compensated for their comparatively small numbers. They have given us plenty of trouble here, few though they are. In fact, definitely outnumbered. They say that Ypres must fall now. One can see it burning. Not without a pang for this beautiful city. Langemark is a heap of rubbish, and all rubbish heaps look alike. There is no sense in describing one. All that remains of the church is the doorway with the date 1620. The battlefield is fearful. One is overcome by a peculiar, sour, heavy, and penetrating smell of corpses. Rising over a plank bridge, you find that its middle is supported only by the body of a long-dead horse. Men that were killed last October lie half in swamp and half in the yellow-sprouting beet fields. The legs of an Englishman, still encased in putties, stick out into a trench, the corpse being built into the parapet. A soldier hangs his rifle on them. A little brook runs through the trench, and everyone uses the water for drinking and washing. It's the only water they have. Nobody minds the pale Englishman who is rotting away a few steps further up. In Langemark Cemetery, a hecatomb had been piled up, for the dead must have lain above ground level. German shells falling into it started a horrible resurrection. At one point, I saw 22 dead horses, still harnessed, accompanied by a few dead drivers. Cattle and pigs lie about, half rotten. Broken trees, drives raised to the ground, crater upon crater in the roads and in the fields. Such is a 6-month-old battlefield.